Welcome to Scary Story, the channel that tells you scary stories.
The Shovel is told to Peter Bernard, read by PQ River. Dear Scary Stories, I have a story that you might or might not want to read because I don't think it's paranormal or about a cryptid or anything, but when it happened to me, it certainly was scary. The fact is, this is the scariest thing that ever happened to me. Okay, first I have to explain the boring details of my life back then so you'll have some context to understand this story. And when this happened about 8 years ago, I was 27 years old, and the young lady I wanted to marry just dumped me for my boss. I couldn't deal with it and quit my job, so I sort of felt like I had lost everything and was indulging in a lot of self-pity. When I wasn't feeling sorry for myself, I was so numbed out that I wasn't feeling much of anything at all. Both my parents were dead, I was an only child, and I was 27, an age where suicide seems romantic. I was in a bad daze, and I needed to get my act together so I could get a new job and start a new life before the rent got overdue. I resolved to take a me day, the way my now ex-girlfriend had always done when she wanted to regroup. I wondered how many of those her days were really her cheating with my boss days, and stopped myself. For the next 24 hours, I was giving myself permission to not think at all about the things I was upset about. I decided to go to Penn Station and get a round-trip ticket to the end of the line on one of the trains I'd never been on before. Then, while riding the unfamiliar train, I'd look out the window and get off at whichever town I felt like, certain that at least nothing there would come attached with memories of her. I can't remember what line I got the tickets on or the name of the station I got off at, but I do remember it was a warm, early autumn day and really lovely out. Spent about 90 minutes wandering around, looking in the shops. I skipped past the Starbucks and had lunch at a local non-chain restaurant instead, intending to do the things I could never do in the city. I was really looking forward to some non-mass manufactured tasting home-cooked food, but it turned out everything tasted like it came out of a can. It probably did. If Rod Serling were still alive, he might be writing those kinds of twist endings by the 21st century. Man yearns for his childhood. Somehow through the Twilight Zone he achieves his dream and returns to his past. Then he realizes with horror that his mom's recipes were actually made out of Libby's canned vegetables and Spam. Plus, there's no cell phone reception or YouTube. Thinking thoughts like this made me feel lighter, and I also had run out of things to do in the town, so I started to look up and notice the tall, tree-covered mountains looming over the town in one direction. It had just sort of seemed like a pretty painted backdrop until I stopped to notice it. There were miles and miles of mountains. It looked like it could sustain life for a family of Bigfoot and a tribe of hillbillies. I imagined what it must be like in there and felt jealous of wild animals that get to live in places like that. When you're feeling sorry for yourself, you even start getting jealous of rats and vermin. Nobody has it as bad as you do. I wasn't equipped to go hiking or camping, but I wondered if I might be able to wander a bit through the outskirts of the forest and chillax for a while before catching an early evening train back to reality. I had no idea if it was open to the public or restricted or how any of that would work, so I just wandered in the direction of the mountains. After about 10 or 15 minutes, the posh neighborhoods and shops gave way to a more factory-looking neighborhood, with large, block-long, four-story tall brick buildings, absolutely nobody out walking on the old cobblestone streets. On the other side of these buildings, which I began to assume were abandoned, was another street and a wall. When I reached it, I saw that the wall was about 4 feet tall and seemed to separate the factory neighborhood from a forest. A little trickle of a stream flowed by immediately in front of me. I looked to my right, then on my left, I noticed a bridge off in the distance which looked like it led over to the other side of the stream. Before I had reached the bridge, I noticed that the stream must have been much larger in the past, more like a river, really. The bridge was far too large for such a tiny stream, and the water ran down the center of a deep, wide depression that obviously had been filled with water in the past. The whole air of abandonment was so different from the warm and quaint feel of the town that I was beginning to wonder if I should just turn back now and not bother visiting the forest. To be honest, I was starting to feel a little creeped out by the whole ghost town vibe. When I reached the other side, I saw the remnants of an old dock, which confirmed my suspicions that this had once been a river. I guess that this river is why the town had come into existence, and it must have originated with those factories built on the river. Everything was decrepit and falling down and had graffiti covering it that itself looked like it might be older than me. Even as a teen hangout or lover's lane, this place was a ghost town. I was about to walk back when I happened to glance at the forest beyond the end of the man-made falling down structures. It was entrancing, like a woman that wants you to pay her some attention. On that day, I was not going to be able to resist her, so off into the woods I went. Wandering slowly among the trees, the air got cleaner and cleaner. It was markedly different than the kind of air I am used to in Manhattan. I turned around to find a landmark to keep my sense of direction and spotted a tall water tower near the train station. Walking backwards, I made mental notes of which side of the tower I was observing and how the trees were situated around it. I turned back around and nearly bumped into him. He stood much taller than me, as I could be certain of, since my forward-looking eyes were looking at his massive, muscular chest, covered by a thin old t-shirt with the Coca-Cola logo on it. I gasped and took a step backwards, mumbling, "Excuse me," as I craned my neck up to try to see his face, which was not looking at me, but at the town. I staggered backwards some more, and his face was now backlit by the setting sun, which burned my eyes. He was wearing jeans, his head was bald, he was giant, and he was holding the largest shovel I've ever seen. "I'm sorry," I stammered, "I wasn't watching where I was going." He continued, staring at the town. "It's time for my train, bye." I walked away quickly, muttering under my breath that I was talking to myself. Then I heard a noise behind me, turned to see that he was running at me, holding the shovel in front of him. "Hey, what? No!" I stammered, and then realized I'd better run. Maybe he'd leave me alone if I just beat it back to town. I made it over the bridge, passed the wall, and was out of breath. I stopped for a second to look behind me and just missed getting smashed in the face by the shovel, which jammed into some metal fencing and got stuck. The giant man worked at getting the shovel released, and I could see it would come free in another try or two, so I turned and ran. I've never run like that before or since. I was more out of breath than I've ever been, yet somehow my legs kept moving anyway. I was four blocks into the factory neighborhood before I even looked back. I shouldn't have, since he was gaining on me again. I was going to have to find a place to hide because I couldn't run like this any longer. I made a right at the next block and ducked down behind some piled-up garbage from another generation. A rat was there that I literally grabbed by the tail and threw down the street. When you're afraid of dying, your priorities completely change. Normally, you couldn't pay me to touch a street rat, but on that day, I didn't even think twice about it. I lay on my back, panting, unable to disguise my heavy breathing until I had caught my breath. I prayed for air, and I prayed no rat would run out on top of me and give away my location to the shovel man. After a while, it occurred to me that I had never heard him run by. When I had caught my breath and started to feel human again, I slowly raised my head past the garbage. The shovel came down hard, but mostly missed me, scraping my cheek and ear and causing me a bit of pain. I screamed and leaped at the man, and we both tumbled onto the street. He fell on his back, and I ran over him toward the town of Little Shops, now only a block away. I screamed, "Help!" one time, Then realizing that screaming took too much air from running, I didn't have to look behind me. I knew the Coca-Cola t-shirt would be close behind. But would he come into the civilized part of the town? I ran through the streets and people were staring at me with unhappy expressions for doing so. I took that as a good sign since they weren't staring behind me in horror. I ducked into Starbucks and ran into the men's room, collapsing in a stall and feeling safe in the arms of corporate capitalist branding. The noises and screams that suddenly came from the store told me that feeling safe here was wrong. A huge crash followed by more screaming said he had smashed the entire storefront window. I reasoned that if I were ever going to be able to get out of there, it would be while there were panic outside. So I exited the bathroom and turned the opposite way from the front of the store, hoping there might be a rear exit, as many of these suburban stores have. Sure enough, there was a back door that emptied into a parking lot, and just beyond it was the train station. My train station. My escape from this lunatic who seemed bent on killing me. It felt like I was flying toward the station through the parking lot. Then a heavy pain started in my chest, and I realized I was taxing my limits and needed to focus. Breathe. Run. Breathe. Run. You can only go as fast as you can go. Slow and steady wins the race. Do I have my return ticket? Yes, it's in my left pocket. No, in my right pocket. When is the train? I raced into the ticket office area and asked the guy panting when the next train was. Booth man started telling me to calm down, and I grew panicky. I looked behind me. Captain Coca-Cola had exited the Starbucks the same way I had and was headed in this direction. Please, for the love of God, when is the next train to the city? I begged him.
Well, sir, if you're going to take the Lord's name in vain, then...
I saw paper schedules on the side and grabbed one. Racing up the stairs to the platform, I didn't hear the rest of what the booth man said. As I reached the top of the stairs, I could hear the shovel destroying the glass doors to the ticket booth area. I shoved the schedule in my pocket and looked around. I was the only person on the platform. The station was mostly open air, but the center part had a covering over it, held up by poles here and there. I shimmied up one of the poles and climbed onto the roof. Maybe I would be safe waiting for the train up here. I could hear terrible noises of destruction and someone was screaming in pain. I hoped it was the shovel man. I hoped I would never see him again and be able to get out of here. No such luck. There he was, coming up the stairs now. Clomp, clomp, clomp. The huge man climbed the staircase. Had he seen me when I saw him? I ducked down, laid back on the roof, and as quietly as possible, pulled the schedule out of my pocket to see when the next train was due in. According to what I was reading and what my watch said, the train should be there right then. I looked down the track and saw nothing, though. I was hoping it hadn't come already. And then my thoughts turned back to Shovel Man as I heard him walking below. He went past me, down to the edge of the platform, and looked around to see if I was hiding down on the tracks or past the end of the station. Then he walked back to directly underneath where I was hiding, and I heard a strange but familiar sound. What was that? It was like a dog sound. I suddenly realized the shovel man was sniffing the air underneath me. If he could smell like a dog, he'd be able to smell my fear and tell I was up there. I decided to stand up as quietly as I could and try to get down to the other end of the roof, but it was too late. Bang! Something had struck the pole underneath me hard, and the entire covering of the station trembled and rocked underneath. Bang! This one knocked me off my balance, and I fell right off the edge of the covering. As I fell, it seemed like time slowed down to a crawl. I think I thought I was going to die because I saw everything I had ever done like it was happening then. I saw past and present as part of one thing. I saw Shovel Man as a force of nature to be accepted. I saw the pavement of the station coming up fast at my face, and I saw a train heading toward the station. A train heading towards the station. Instincts I didn't know had kicked in, and I somehow landed in such a way as to only cause extreme pain, but no lasting or debilitating injuries. I was about 9 or 10 feet from the man, which meant maybe 2 feet from the reach of his shovel. I screamed and ran directly at the man, which caused his eyes to open wide and his face to make the strangest surprised expression I'll ever see. His surprise allowed me to run right past him and down to the advertising and benches further down the platform. He turned around and raced after me. I turned the corner more sharply than I knew he could, and then started racing back the way I came from. The train was almost entering the station. I thought I was keeping him at a safe distance, but the shovel man landed a hit square on my back with the flat of his shovel, and I had all the wind knocked out of me. I turned on my back in pain, trying to start breathing again as I saw the huge man walk over me, looking down at me expressionlessly. He raised his shovel far over his head and prepared to end my life. I kicked up crazily with both feet as hard as I could. I think I got him in the balls with my left foot and on his left hip with my right foot, which closed his eyes in pain and sent him sideways a bit just as the train pulled past us fast. The corner of the first car clipped him on the side of his head. I saw the blood fly one way and the man fly another. I would like to say I ran heroically toward the back of the train, but actually it took me a while even to stand, and when I first started moving it was more of a combination crawl and stagger. Eventually I was limping, which was an improvement. The train pulled to a halt. Then I looked behind me. Mr. Man Mountain was standing again at full height, and the blood was streaming down the side of his face. He slammed the shovel into one of the train's windows, smashing it. A conductor leaned out and cursed at him to stop, so the giant took a swing at the conductor's head, narrowly missing. I realized I had opened into a sprint, yet somehow the man seemed to be gaining on me. My lungs, legs, and body ached for me to go into one of these cars and sit down, but I kept going, running, running to the final car. The bells rang, signaling that the doors were about to close. I dove into the final car, and the man ran past the door. Then he doubled back as the door shut, managing to get one arm inside the door. He turned and signaled to the motorman to open the door and let him in. But there was no motorman looking, and the train began moving. Coke Man began howling something indecipherable and walking with the train as we headed down the track. Then he had to jog, then run. He tried to get in, he tried to get his arm out. Neither worked. Meanwhile, we were gaining speed, and he was tripping and unable to run fast enough to keep up. As we exited the station, his face and chest slammed into a pole at the front of the station at what must have been at least 30 miles an hour, and he was flung free of the door with a noise that combined a snap with a crack and a gurgle. I watched out the back window as we pulled further and further away, and I never saw him get up. That didn't ease my paranoia any, though, so I watched outside the windows on both sides as we pulled into each station, genuinely expecting to see him there with his ridiculously large shovel waiting to kill me. I reasoned to myself that I just saw him get his arm snapped and his face dented, but the rest of the ride home was hell, anyway. Finally, when I got back to Penn Station, it dawned on me that I really had escaped, and I started weeping silently in my seat, continuing as I walked among the crowd. Normally, people bumping into me annoyed me, but this time it meant I was safe, and I was home. I walked through the city, which looked different to me now. Just as dirty, sure, just as crap-encrusted, just as slimy and dusty and decrepit, but a different kind of dirty, crap-encrusted, slimy, dusty, and decrepit. And whereas when I left, everything seemed sterile and pointless, now these same streets symbolize potential impossibilities for me. I felt back in my element. I may not have the life I want, but at least I have my life, I said out loud, and a woman looked at me funny as she walked past. There are lots of chances you can take and lots of adventures you can have that don't require you to go on the turf of crazy homicidal maniacs. You can stay on your own turf for your entire safe life, and engage in intellectual adventures. This is what I learned from my near-death experiences on that day. Just stay on your own turf and you'll be safe. And there it was, the double-wide double-door entrance to my apartment building. I was safe at home, both literally and figuratively, and I felt lighter than air. And then I saw it, just laying there. Couldn't be. Yes, it could. It was a shovel. No, it was the shovel. The shovel was laying on the sidewalk in front of my apartment building. And so, I knew that this story was not over. The end.
Check us out on our YouTube channel, Scary Stories NYC.
Come back for more scary stories.